Thank you very much. I would like, first of all, to thank the organizers for this invitation. It is a pleasure to participate in this prestigious and inspiring meeting in this marvelous setting in this beautiful city of Budapest. I have been asked to make a 5-minute comment on these three very interesting presentations. And I will try to keep my time in making three very brief comments that will try to stimulate discussion and overarching the three presentations. My first comment is that if we do coincide that the success scenario as presented by the foresight exercise is the best possible one that we want to achieve in 2030, we are faced once more with the question of urgency to start implementing now some of the necessary changes to make sure that we are on the right track to achieve those goals. We have heard during these 2 days a lot of interesting ideas, but I will highlight a few that for me seem central of what are these changes. I think I speak from, as Cottage has mentioned, from a specific point of view. I'm a sociologist by training, and I have worked the major part of my life in Latin America trying to really put together not only sociology research, but also in the last 10 years working with natural science. And what I find is that the first thing that we must achieve if we want to have a success scenario in 2030 is to achieve a real integration of all countries and regions in scientific capacity and development. The tendency to look at science from the point of view of the center is a very strong one. Even in the process of the foresight analysis, there had to be a very willful a very willful strategy to involve the regional perspectives from the ICSU regional offices. But I think that everybody would agree that that has greatly enriched the result and really brought up different drivers and different perspectives that were not there before. So to have the emerging and developing countries participate fully in the scientific and technological development is not an easy exercise, but it is an essential one, and one that will certainly bring new perspectives and ideas. This is an ongoing and long-term process, but it needs to be strengthened now. And to do this, certain aspects of the way science is done today must be changed. We have heard a lot of these changes, but I think that one of the very important ones is the global governance and funding of science. There has been many suggestions here, and I think that perhaps this is something we should look at very deeply. To do today cooperative scientific research between North and South or South and South is a very difficult endeavor. Either we change this and make collaboratory research a real thing now, our 2030 success vision will not be there. My second comment has to do with both presentations, the foresight and the social sciences, for it is related to the question of interdisciplinarity, transdisciplinarity, multidisciplinary research. Once again, we have heard in many presentations the importance of science to answer many of the challenges of the world today, and the importance of fully integrating the social science to be able in this effort. What I do think that the very interesting presentation of the social science report shows is that this is a two-way road, and that an enormous effort must be made both from the social scientist's point of view and the natural scientist's. I thought very interesting the several divides that were presented on the report, but I think that one that was mentioned, not exactly a divide, but as a cause of a difference that is very visible, is of course the question of language. In Latin America, if you look at the production of ISI articles, it is very low because nobody writes in English. But if you look at the databases in Spanish or Portuguese, you will see the enormous vitality of the production of social science in Latin America. And also, in a very interesting, I don't want to get too much on that or I'll pass my 5 minutes, but the way social sciences produce is very different. Books are a very important part of social science production, very different from natural sciences. So we can talk about that. But I would like to make a comment on how ICSU has been really contributing to this process of integration of social science. And I would suggest that you look at the visioning process, because there I think that some of the essential aspects of a good collaboration are there, of having jointly thought an object of interest from the beginning, and the whole process of consulting and of really thinking together, hopefully, is there in a sort of a template of what is a good collaborative interdisciplinary research. And finally, a very short comment on energy, because I think this is really one of the central issues on the next 50 years. And it is interesting that, as in water, I think that energy will be the place of a real confrontation between different regions of the world. And what Aki said was very interesting about the difficulty of the old structure accepting the new, the necessary investment in new research and on the new social form of dealing with energy. And I think this is also something that must be emphasized and really looked at, and where social sciences also have an important part to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. And now Atiya Havas, who's a member of the Academy here, and also a science policy research expert and foresight expert. He's had no involvement whatsoever in the exercise that ICSU has been doing, and so he can criticize it as openly as he likes or add to it, whatever. Over to you, Atiya.
Thank you very much. Actually, I'm not a member of this academy, but I work for an institute of this academy. These are two different positions, very different positions. Actually, I would be very happy to be engaged in a very detailed discussion, so practically paragraph by paragraph, because it was really a great source of inspiration for me, but I only have 5 minutes. I'm still struggling what to skip and what to focus on. So in principle, I would like to offer comments on the methods. Probably I will skip most of that. A little bit on the content, and probably the most important would be the exploitation or using a really nasty word, take-up of your results. But before doing that, I would like I'm a bit disappointed because I thought it was really a very nice and new idea to set the time horizon as 2031 instead of 2030 or 35. When I heard that this is the anniversary of ICSU, then I was a bit disappointed. But still, I like the time horizon. Also, I have not been involved in this exercise, and obviously I have not been involved in organizing this conference or forum, but I'm also a bit disappointed that these issues are not discussed at the plenary session. I'm very happy to see a large number of participants, so I think that it would, and that goes directly to my last remark, which is not coming now in details, that it would be very important to take up these results. And I can see several opportunities. I think it goes without saying that the results are going to be used by ICSU. On that point, I would offer one methodological remark, namely that actually in the oral presentation by John, it was more emphasized that the success scenario can be used as to check robustness of your actions. So in that respect, I think there would be no need for a separate scenario as it is in the document now, or not in that way, or also in the first part of that part of the presentation, John presented it as a standalone scenario without going into details which would be relevant for ICSU. If I were you, I would suggest to put more emphasis on elaborating on those considerations. What to do if scenario A, if scenario B, scenario C, or scenario D would prevail, or any combinations of those. But in terms of implementation, what would be really important, in my view, if member organizations of ICSU, other science, technology, innovation policy organizations, NGOs dealing with those issues, researchers, foresight practitioners would use your report as a starting point for participatory and systemic exploration of these issues. And on that note, I would like to suggest some partly further issues or partly issues to be further to be explored in further details, because some of these issues are already in the report. But I would like to encourage you to give more emphasis or more details on that. One is the interplay between national and international science. I do understand that from the point of view of ICSU, international science is the issue. But if you want to understand how international science would work, I think this aspect, the interplay between national and international, would be a very important issue, because even as you say, in the best case scenario, fortunately you are not using this term, only around 2% of global R&D funding would be devoted to international. So obviously the national element is important. Also, concerning knowledge, how it is generated, how it is validated, how it is diffused, how it is exploited. That would be an important additional issue. Sorry, I should have started by saying that obviously there is no single project which can have all the nice or would be nice elements. So this is not meant for criticism. This is partly encouraging you, but even more those who hopefully would use your results as a starting point for further explorations and considerations. Another issue which would be quite important for ICSU and others who want to deal with these questions is the governance models of various policies and, of course, governance models of SPR policies in the EU and other world regions. That would have an important impact on all four your exploratory scenarios, let alone the success scenario. And then just one or two remarks on the actual scenarios that you have developed. One is that ICT is always trumpeted or fanfared as the solution. And unfortunately, sorry, I have a strong value judgment in that respect. you are a victim of that as well when you are talking about distance learning. That would solve lots of problems. Perhaps it can solve some minor problems, but my understanding of education is that the most important part is face-to-face contact. Without that, students would not understand tacit knowledge, and that goes for, obviously, international collaboration as well. So instead of having email exchanges or even Skype or phone conferences, face-to-face exchanges are still very important. Using scientific language because of tacit knowledge, using less scientific language, because I'm pretty sure that all of you can still remember teachers from your primary school, secondary school, and also professors from universities whose personality were more important and still important now for your life than what they said 30, 40, or, I mean, fortunately there are some younger colleagues in the room as well, 10 or 15 years ago. I think I should stop now because you have stand up. Thank you very much for your attention and congratulations to this excellent piece of work.
Thank you, Atiya. In fact, I realize that you haven't seen the report that some of the discussion is about. It's not yet publicly available. It's been sort of semi-publicly available and drafts have been out. But I hope that you can pick up, nevertheless, the main issues and think of them in terms of what is our vision for 2031 for global science. So Michael Keenan is the next commentator. Michael was involved with the ICSU exercise, is a foresight expert from University of Manchester and also works with OECD on the science policy.
Okay, thanks Carthage, and thank you to the organizers for the invitation. I'll be brief. I was asked, as the others, to comment upon the presentations and some of the big issues that have been raised. And what I thought I'd do is to lend you a few comments on foresight and future-oriented analysis, the practice of future-oriented technology analysis, and what we might learn from what we've heard and from the history of these sorts of activities, and what lessons we might bring in the future to do these activities in a better way than perhaps we do them at the moment. One thing struck me when Carthage asked me to be part of this panel, and this was the word uncertainty. It was raised quite a lot in the little note that he prepared for us. And some of the things I picked up from listening to the presentations was that uncertainties are driven in large part by complexity, by growing complexity, meaning we even have greater uncertainties than perhaps we had in the past. And because of this uncertainty, this complexity, things emerge that we're in fact unable to anticipate, and we have to accept that. We cannot even perhaps even comprehend them. But by doing exercises like foresight-type future-oriented technology analysis, what we can be is at least a little bit better prepared than we would be if we didn't do that sort of analysis. We can, if you like, almost simulate how futures might unfold, how we might respond to different sorts of futures, and that prepares us. It gives us some knowledge of what may lie out there, but perhaps more importantly, it provides us with certain capabilities, certainly within our organizations, to be more agile, to be more future-oriented by going through these sorts of exercises. That's looking at this sort of thing, though, from a very reactive perspective, if you like. We also need to be very proactive, of course, vis-a-vis the futures. We heard Naki's presentation. It's very scary, the sorts of worlds, the tracks that we're on right now. And so we need to be rather proactive in shifting to another trajectory. And these sorts of exercises can also be very useful in taking a more proactive perspective vis-a-vis the future, with a view to enabling these transitions to more sustainable economies and societies. Now, this requires, of course, that we take a system-wide perspective, but we also need to ensure that we involve some of the main stakeholders. We need to bring about participatory processes, and through doing so, to build coalitions of actors, or to increase the number of those actors that Naki had on his slides there, and the linkages between them, so that they become a more powerful force for change. Now, there are several implications for future-oriented analysis if we accept what I've just said about the nature of uncertainty, the nature of having a more proactive stance vis-a-vis the future. But I'll only briefly highlight two of them because I've only got probably another minute or two left. First of all, it's important that when we do these activities, we actually take a multi-level perspective. Transitions will not be made through a sole focus on actors, for example. We must also pay attention to the structural factors, things like money, power distributions, infrastructures, and the like, that shape the things that actors do, that pattern the sorts of behaviors that they engage in. There are also various institutional factors, things like markets, laws, regulations, that also have a similar patterning effect. And there are, of course, also ideational factors, belief systems, worldviews, and the like, that also shape and pattern the things that actors do. And these are exceedingly important. And so when we're doing this sort of analyses, we can not only just focus on the actors, we also need to look at what's often called the system. But the system needs to be thought about through these other lenses as well, through this kind of structural, ideational, and institutional lenses. So that's the first point. The second point, when I read the social sciences report and this presentation of the issues in terms of divides, I'd been thinking along similar lines, but rather than using the word divides, I was thinking of the words boundaries. And they don't quite align, but they're not far, far off. And divides and boundaries are often viewed rather negatively as some sort of barriers. But I think it's also interesting to think about boundaries as places for opportunity and for creative thinking. And here I'm going to just reel off 10 boundaries that I think are interesting for us. I'll really just read them out. There's 10 boundaries that I think will be interesting for us as when we do science-type foresight to look at. The first is the boundaries between what's public and what's private. A second one is the interaction between human and machine. A third one is between global and local, which we heard about already. There's the obvious ones about disciplinary boundaries. There are also, of course, the boundaries between different administrations, which we find in national governments, but of course in Europe as well, between the European Commission, the national, the regional, and so on. There are also boundaries that divide industrial sectors. There are boundaries between knowledge producers and knowledge users. Boundaries between developed and developing countries, which we heard previously. Boundaries between structure and agency. And finally, boundaries between the short and the long term. Now, if we can think about all of those boundaries in a creative way, I think by doing that, there are many opportunities that we can identify, and we can think perhaps in a more proactive way on how we might use science to enable that transition, which Naki so very well told us about earlier on. So I'll stop there, Carthage, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. And the final commentator is Yuan Li, who I think needs no introduction. He is the president of ICSU. He's also a Nobel laureate. He's done a lot in basic science in chemistry. Any chemist in the room will know about his research. And he's also thought a lot and said a lot of wise things about the future challenges. And so, Yuan, over to you as the last commentary, and then it's over to the audience after that.
Before I speak, I want to clarify what I will be saying is not the position of ICSU. As a commentary, I'm speaking my mind about the future. So that's something I find is difficult. After I became the president of ICSU on October 1st, I realized that what I said should be representing ICSU. But my free spirit mind were not easy for me to do that. Okay, 40 years ago, when a doctor said, you got cancer, you have 6 more months to live. In most of the cases, it's true. 6 months later, you'll be gone. So during the 6 months, the patient will try to make the best for their life. Now, if doctor said, you have lung cancer, he will not say you have 6 months to live. He said you have to remove the cancer, to discover early, you have to do chemical therapy, radiation therapy, and then that person will live forever. Today, if climate scientists or like Lofstrom give a lecture, then, or if you listen to Naki Chernovich, is this where it's from? Professor Naki Chernovich has mentioned about what's going to happen, then we say, well, human society on Earth, 40 years later, will be really in danger because of the climate change, or when the temperature goes up to 2 degrees, might go into discontinuity, then we might be really be miserable. I will not say we will disappear. That will scare a lot of people and become very unreasonable. So we'll be very miserable. This scenario, I don't think we can accept. So it was interesting when we go to this foresight scenario, many input coming in from members, national members, union members, and one of the members said, if you want to have a dependable future, we have to invent ourselves. We should not just extend what we are doing now. Well, it's interesting. If by 2050, at the time, my granddaughter will be about 45 years old. At the time, if she said, well, we're happy that the transformation was successful. My grandfather and all the people working together, transformation was successful. So we are living in a sustainable society. Of course, at that time, she might say that fortunately, the population didn't go up to 9 or 10 billion people as the United Nations predicted in 2011, 2011. And also, diet change. But not the developing country become eating more meat and require more food. I think it's the people all over the world eat more healthier and everybody become healthier and we didn't have to produce crop twice as much. Instead, we maintain a relatively low level as the level 2011. So that scenario is something that we really need to work on it. It will not happen if we go as business as usual. And if my granddaughter were tour around the world, she would say, gee, the world is so interesting, so different. She would remember her grandfather said, when he was touring around, he did find every city looks like American city. Americanization of the city, full of automobile, traffic is clogging up, and that didn't happen because every country moved very differently. And Asia, Africa, depend on the environment, they somehow live very harmoniously with nature and with, I don't know, I already used up my 5 minutes. So I should not prolong, but I do want to say from the 2050 scenario and then we come back to 2030. Then at 2030, people say that it's fortunate the global institution play a more important role. And also, globalization is no longer the game of the rich people. Somehow, connection to the land or the people live on the land. Or some of my social scientist friend who said planetarianism, not the globalization or this planet. Planetarianization is taking place and people work together but deeply rooted on Earth. But what I'm saying today is we should not take the prediction the population will go up to 9 to 10 billion people and diet will change, we need to produce 80% more food and all those suggestions, we really will have to invent ourselves a new future. I should stop here. I mean, That's not the position of ICSU. Thank you very much.
So we have 15 minutes to make sure that the world for Professor Lee's granddaughter in 2050 is the perfect world. So that's a fairly easy challenge. Any questions, any comments? All the panelists can answer, or just comments, or further views. If you put your hands up and hold them up so I can get a vision of who... let's try a numbering exercise. 1, 2, 3, keep your hands up. 4, 5, 6. Okay, if you've got your number, we'll start with number 1. Yeah, sorry.
There's a microphone. We can maybe...
Yeah.
I'm Klaus Lukas, Vice President of the Berlin-Brandenburg Academy of Sciences and Humanities. I would like to make a brief comment to the topic of multi or interdisciplinarity. I think there is a general consensus here and probably everywhere in the world that this is one of the things that we have to promote in science in the coming years. But my feeling is that a consensus of this kind is one thing, but a consensus about the way towards this goal is another thing. I'm telling you the experience that I just had. I'm organizing an interdisciplinary workshop on a European scale on bioresources from oceans, which is one of the topics which are, I think, are going to become very important. And I try to motivate people not only from the social science, but from the humanities, historians, philosophers, and so to participate. And it was very difficult for me, even on the European scale, to find about 5 people that were able to contribute to the topic. Now, what does this tell me? I have the impression that these disciplines have not yet realized that they should give more energy, more thought to the problems that are really important in the world and to collaboration with the natural and the technical sciences. And even in this conference, we are going to have a declaration on Saturday morning, and when you read this declaration, you don't even find the word of multidisciplinarity. So I think we are too much appealing that this is important, and we give too little thought about how we should do that, and we should do more of that. Thank you.
Number 2. You've forgotten it.
Well, the scenario that is painted here, the knowledge divide, the social science behavior and things like that, I think I'd like to follow Professor Lee's concept. First of all, looking at the, if we say 2030 for the foresight, then a child born this hour will be 19. So the child that is going to leave the world is already here. So what do we need to prepare to get that child to participate? Whether that child is born in Africa or born in Asia or Australia. But the sad part of it could be that there is another child who will have been born, who will have understood everything we're saying, but he wasn't born today because the mother died during labor. These are issues that we should use to challenge ourselves and use the technicality of our sciences and the complexity of the knowledge that we are generating to be able to prepare that world for that child. Whether we're going to prepare it as parallel futures or convergence future, therefore, with the capability that we have, I think we have no choice but to prepare for that future, that child that is already born today will participate in a world that's convergence of knowledge, that's convergence of equity, and therefore will live that parallel future wherever that child has been born. Thank you.
comments,
Pekka Sinerva from the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research. I'm actually going to echo, in fact, the number one's comment about the challenge we have, about, in fact, making the idea of interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary research actually work. In our institute, we have been, we struggle with this fairly successfully, but it takes a huge amount of effort. And it takes funding mechanisms, which don't exist typically, which a typical problem is that funding mechanisms don't allow people or don't recognize the fact that there are borders and that you might want to work with scholars in other countries. It ends up making the challenge of actually bringing a group together in a sustained way. And the problems we're talking about require that kind of sustained engagement. It means that we end up having to not just have a workshop here or there, but we end up having to create groups of people who are going to come together in a sustained dialogue so that they actually learn the language and learn how the concept that they actually work with. I don't see I see very few such models of support, especially ones that cross international boundaries. And I think that's actually one of our challenges. If we're really going to make this work, we've been saying this now for about 15 years, but very few mechanisms have actually come up to actually support the scholars, many of whom actually want to actually do this. Yeah, that's a comment as opposed to a question.
Number four.
I expect that most of the people here who are like me in natural sciences in this room understand the importance of social science in this. But if there are people who do not, or if you want to convince your friends, I'd like to give a very specific example. I have a colleague who's a behavioral economist who works for the council in an area called Camden in London, which is a poor area. There's lots of people in social housing that are provided by the local authorities. They have access to the energy consumption data. Half the people chosen at random, they told, if you turn your thermostat down 1 degree, you save £65 a year. The others they did not tell. And they looked what would happen. The result was that the people who had been told how to save energy, their consumption went up 5 or 6% relative to the control group. Presumably they said it's only £1.20 a week. What the hell, I can be a bit warmer. There is similar evidence in the US. There are areas on the East and West Coast where you are told how your consumption compares to the average in your street. If that's given in a neutral way, it tends to put consumption up. But if it's given in the right way, it can save 2% or something like that. So it's really, really important in the energy demand, which is critical, to have the input of the social sciences, and don't assume people will behave as economic man as natural sciences and maybe economists might tend to believe. This is really important. I cannot overemphasize the importance of social sciences, including economists, by the way, in tackling these challenges such as energy.
It's interesting that Pekka and Chris and I are all high energy physicists. I'm from Fermilab. My name is G.P. Ye, and I'm speaking strictly as a scientist and as a concerned scientist. So I believe that the most important question in the next 40 years is energy. And there are indicators that most countries have a goal of reducing or supplying 50% of the energy from renewables and sustainables by 2050. So we have a hope of solving the world energy problem by 2050. Now to do that, we have to demonstrate it by 2030. And there are indicators like solar power, wind power, biofuels, that all seem very promising. I give you a couple of examples. In the year 2010, the world installed 40 gigawatts or 38 gigawatts of wind power. In the year, same year 2010, the world installed 17 gigawatts of solar power. So we can do it. Those are potential solutions too, and together with energy efficiency, those are solutions to the energy problem. Now there's another new one, which is transformational. and it's the thorium energy. If we switch over to use thorium energy, it can supply a big fraction of the world energy. It's also interesting that thorium energy was invented by people like Eugene Wigner, Alvin Weinberg, and his colleague Alvin Weinberg, and Edward Teller, and his student Rakowski, and his co-worker Mohr. So it's a Hungarian tradition. I hope the Hungarian colleagues, together with the rest of the world, develop this thorium energy by 2030 and will save the world. Thorium energy is already in China's national program, and it's also in India's national program. And together we can do it. Thank you.
There was a number six?
Yes. Maybe I will drop my question. No, it's a comment. It's a very good comment. It's a comment.
And I am Alex Smilzadeh, Secretary General of the International Union of Geodesy and Geophysics, one of the founding members of ICSU, I mean union founding member of ICSU. And the point is the following. If we will look in the history, I think one of the first scientific foresight analysis was done in 18th century. By that time, great scientists like Newton developed an excellent theory, and it's the Leibniz and Laplace from the different countries, it was the first in there. And they came to the understanding that we live in the one of the best of the world. But science is not based on the expected things, the expected results or foresight, based on the surprises. And surprise came in 1751 when the earthquake in Lisbon occurred. And it shaped the whole philosophy, all science at that time, only one event. And the, later on, in Candide, Voltaire asked, that is the world which is the best we are live, and what will look like other worlds. And that is the point. I think I fully agree with Professor Lee. We should to understand what we would like to get from this foresight analysis. If we would like to have a scenarios of the future, it should be multiple scenarios. It should be model behind of these scenarios, and we should understand how this model works. And might be one of the developed in yes, has some dynamical model of the behind. I don't know exactly what was the model behind of the ICSU or behind of the very interesting reports. It's no way to tell that something. It's excellent reports and so on. But what was the model? And did you look inside the backward and so? I think that's not the first report. For example, 20 years ago, also people thought about what will happen in 20 years. How their prediction or their foresight analysis really were implemented today? Thank you.
So I think we have 2 minutes left. A quick response from whoever is ready to respond from the panel to any of those issues. I think it was a really critical issue that came up about interdisciplinarity. I'm not sure the picture is as negative as portrayed. Are there good examples, at least, that someone could give?
I would just like to respond briefly to your question. Behind the scenarios that I have shown are integrated assessment models. There's a couple of models of energy system, economy, land use, atmosphere, air pollution, and so on. So I think that's one of the new frontiers that the scientific community is working on. But I think your last comment, I'll be very brief, I think is very interesting. You know, what did we learn about previous scenarios and foresight activities? And from my perspective, I think this was one of the most important things, is to look back, and many have looked back. The record is dismal, but I think very often the key question is, even in the cases where the scenarios did help inform the future, the key question is, did it do it for good or for a wrong reason? So I think even there we have major issues. But I would like to support your suggestion. I think this is one of the most important things, is to see what we have learned from those exercises collectively.
I would also like to comment on multi, trans, inter, whatever disciplinarity. Actually, I would like to underline that even in your success scenario, it is not fully understood. So you are talking about technical fixes, and as Nebojša has emphasized, as an illustration for energy, but in many other fields, these grand challenges are complex ones, as Michael has also emphasized. Therefore, you need knowledge from different fields, and they have to be applied together. So not, it would be a mistake to look for only technical fixes. And on the point why it is not taken up, besides funding, the lack of funding opportunities and lack of stability, lack of sustainability in terms of funding, also if we take of publication possibilities, assessment of individuals, organizations, or the whole research systems, then it is against everything what we have for centuries. So it is not going to be an easy job to change it. And a point on Alice's remark to encourage North-South cooperation. I used to work for an institute which was specializing on issues for developing countries, innovation and innovation policy in developing countries, the South. And then, that was already 10 years ago, and I was trying to convince several colleagues that East-South cooperation would be equally important, if not more, because we can learn a lot in a mutual way, because there are lots of very similar structural problems, of course, completely different historical legacies. And again, like for multidisciplinary, there is no way to fund those types of research, because my colleagues in coming from this region, simply they cannot offer joint projects with colleagues from South America or certain countries of Asia, and vice versa. And the developed countries who might fund some North-South cooperation, joint research project, they would never fund East-South cooperation. Thank you.
So the last word to a social scientist, Françoise, 1 minute.
Less than 1 minute. Thank you very much. I totally agree with all the comments which have been made on the fact that we've been saying for many years that there should be more interdisciplinary research, and de facto, there are very few. There is an increase in the number of interdisciplinary journals, but the traditional mainstream journals continue to reward pure disciplinary subjects. This is a fact. We need to look more into that before to be able to change it. One of the things that I mentioned is the fact that you have more and more project funding, and very short project funding is not a good trend. But project funding on the long term can be good. And that if there should be more project funding which is emphasizing climate change, fighting against poverty or whatever, this will push towards more interdisciplinary work. And whether people like it or not, they will do it. And there will be more institutes of this kind. My last point is the fact that the next World Social Science Report will be on climate change and will be investigating this issue much more in detail. Thank you.